by a grant from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, bringing the world closer to home through performances by Camerata Sweden, the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra, Israeli singer Shava Alberstein, Laura Fuentes y Calicanto from South America, and A Scottish Christmas with fiddler Bonnie Rideout. For more information, contact the Krannert Center ticket office at 217-333-6280 or visit krannertcenter.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us this morning. Today, in the first hour of the show, we will have an archive. I just wanted to again mention that in hour number two. However, we will be taking your calls and we'll be doing something that is a regular feature of the program, and that's the show that we call Talk to the Family Doctor. Dr. Jeff Swearingen from Carl Clinic will be with us in hour number two to take your calls. However, in this first hour, we go to the Focus 580 archives. That means that, keep in mind, as you listen, in this first hour, we'll not be taking calls. This show first broadcast on May the 13th. In this hour of the show, we'll be exploring the history of mobility in media, and we will concentrate mostly on the unique impact of a device that is small enough to fit in your pocket and allows you to converse or to exchange messages with just about anybody, any place, at any time. Of course, the downside of the technology is that you can be reached by almost anyone, anywhere, anytime. The thing that we're talking about here is the cell phone. And our guest is Paul Levinson. He's written a book on this. It's titled Cell Phone, The Story of the World's Most Mobile Medium and How It Has Transformed Everything. And it does indeed look at the various issues surrounding cell phone use, what that means for relations between people, how it has changed our lives. The book is published by Palgrave Macmillan and is out now if you would like to look at it. Our guest, Paul Levinson, has been the subject of major articles in a number of publications, New York Times, Wired, Christian Science Monitor. He has written science fiction. His novels, The Silk Code and The Consciousness Plague, have won major awards. He's professor and chair of communication and media studies at Fordham University. That's in New York City. And he is joining us this morning by telephone. Professor Levinson, hello.
Good morning.
Thanks for talking with us.
My pleasure.
I certainly appreciate it. The cell phone now is, relatively speaking, an inexpensive device, and it's not at all difficult to get one and to have one and to be able to use it. Do you know offhand, I'm just curious, how many cell phones there are and how many cell phones per person there are in the United States?
About 60% of the population now have cell phones in the United States. In terms of raw numbers, China actually is a country that has the most cell phones. They have practically a billion people with cell phones just in China. So and it's growing constantly. The fastest growing medium is, however, still television, which within 10 years from the late 1940s to the late 1950s pretty much saturated the population with up to 99% of the people in the United States by the late 1950s having television. But the cell phone is probably the second fastest growing medium in the United States. Mm.
It is interesting that, in as much as there are an awful lot of people who have cell phones in this country, there are other places where the penetration of the cell phone is even greater and where people seem to have such enthusiasm for the technology and use them for everything imaginable, including fairly trivial kinds of communication. But maybe that's in the eye of the beholder, I guess.
Well, the key factor there is something that we media theorists call leapfrogging. And in parts of the world that ironically did not have very good telephone service, because it's very expensive to put wires across the country, either to put them up on poles or put them in cables in the ground, that takes a lot of work, a lot of time, and a lot of money. So in those countries that did not have that kind of infrastructure, the cell phone caught on there even faster in some cases than in the more developed countries. And then for a variety of reasons, in the Far East, in Asia, and I mentioned China, and Hong Kong, and Singapore, and Taiwan, in those areas also cell phones caught on even faster than here in the United States. And another interesting distinction is that over there, texting, which is the sending of text messages on the cell phone, in Japan, for example, is probably a more popular use of the cell phone than having a verbal conversation.
That's interesting. Why do you think that that is?
Part of it has to do with the culture of the country. Japan has always traditionally and still now places a higher ethical value on courtesy. And so, you know, as we can see around us here in the United States, when people are having verbal conversations on the cell phone, those can seem intrusive and annoying to people in the vicinity. One of the benefits of sending text messages is nobody hears your voice. Nobody is privy to the conversation except you and the party having the conversation. So that's probably the main reason why it caught on in the Far Eastern countries.
Yeah. One of the interesting and maybe provocative things about the technology is that it can be used not only to exchange information but to do other things. Now, we know you can talk on it, you can send text messages, you can surf the web. I guess if you can manage the tiny little screen on your phone, you can take pictures and send pictures. I think people have also experimented using the telephone as kind of an ATM card, at least the kind of thing that can interface with other devices, and you can buy things and use that as a way of paying for them, sort of charging them in that sense. Maybe you can talk about the various things that you can do and how uses of the device have expanded beyond talking on it.
Well, that's a very crucial point. And the template, the ideal for that kind of multimedia dimensionality in the cell phone is the human brain itself. And with this kilogram of matter that we each have in our skulls, we process the whole gamut of information. We hear, see, taste, dream, remember, reason, project, all of those and many, many more. And so it's not surprising that as we evolve our media, we, rather than doing different things with different devices, are moving slowly but surely towards a situation where we can do just about anything with one device. And it looks like the cell phone will be that device, because it started out as a vehicle of conversation, verbal conversation, which it still is. But a key leap was made when the cell phone became connected to the web. And the web was already something that I call the medium of media, because even before the cell phone, on the web, you could see images, hear music, have conversations in text, send email, read newspapers, see video clips, you know, all of those things and more. Once the cell phone began connecting to the web, all of those things, all that cornucopia of information became available through the cell phone. And I think within a few years, we won't even distinguish between cell phone versus web. It'll all be one device. We already, of course, with Palm Pilots, can do an enormous amount of that as well. And in fact, through broadband connections on the web, through our Palm Pilot devices, we can actually have conversations. So what we're seeing is a convergence of just about every medium that's ever been invented, all into this one little device that we carry in our palms. And in a way, what it's doing, and this gets back to Marshall McLuhan, who talked about media as extensions of our human senses, what this cell phone is extending is our brains and everything our brains process.
So that's it. If you ask the big question, what's the difference between the cell phone and previous portable information technologies or portable mediums, is that it incorporates, it takes everything that all of those other things do that only do one thing and puts them all together in one device that has multiple functions. It's sort of, it makes me think about the illustration that's on the cover of their book. It is sort of the equivalent of the Swiss Army knife.
That's right. That's exactly it. And, I use that metaphor in the book. Previous portable media, which are still important in our society, ranging from originally the Kodak camera, which in the 1880s was very revolutionary, because until that time, if you wanted to have a photograph taken, you had to go to a photographer's studio and sit there, and it was a very formal occasion. What the Kodak camera did and ever since then is allow people to take a little camera with them and photograph anything they want out in the world. Then in the 1950s, the transistor and its replacement of the big bulky vacuum tube allowed people to carry around little radios, which were called transistor radios. But in both those cases, all the transistor radio could do is receive radio signals. All that the Kodak camera could do is take photographs. And in contrast, as we now see with the cell phone, it can do all of that and much more. And I think it's important also to mention with unintended consequences. For example, no one thought when a year or two ago cell phones began to be outfitted with camera devices that this could cause a problem with people taking photographs of people in various, you know, compromising positions and, you know, unclothed and so on. You know, in retrospect, it seems not surprising that that happened, but we're always surprised by the consequences of new technologies.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580, Paul Levinson. He is professor and chair of communication and media studies at Fordham University in New York City, and he is the author of the book Cell Phone, the story of the world's most mobile medium and how it has transformed everything. We have a caller in Belgium nearby here, line number 4. Hello.
Good morning, all. I better say first that I am in the minority. I don't own one, nor have I ever used one. But the biggest problem I see with this technology is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Inge, but several years ago we were having discussions about some topic, and somebody had a cell phone and had an accident on your show.
What?
Bumped into something. Seems to me it's been 5, 6, 10 years ago. I don't know. It's a long time ago.
Wow. You know, I don't recall that, but we have here among ourselves had that conversation about that we would hate for that to happen, for someone to be driving, listening to the show, talking on a cell phone, and then have an accident. And I think early on, sometimes we suggested to people if they were driving that they pull off before they call in, and then we have conversations about these things. Then we talked among ourselves and we thought, well, that's a little bit heavy parental, you know. Maybe we don't need to lecture people about the dangers of driving and talking at the same time. But it's something we've actually thought about. But I don't remember that having happened. But you could. Your memory of that could be better than mine.
Mine could be foggy, too, because I listen to various shows. But that's the topic I was going to bring up. I don't know how many times I've been driving down the road and see people talking, and they don't pay attention. And near misses, a lot of times, especially driving around corners when you're at a stoplight. Amazing.
Well, that's a very crucial point. And, you know, a lot of people, unfortunately, think about the cell phone in an automobile in the same way that they think about turning on their radio. It's a very different thing. You're not having a conversation with the radio. The radio isn't asking you questions. It's very easy to see the road ahead of you and focus on things and put the radio in the deep background of your mind, whereas it's not that easy to do that with a cell phone. However, that said, I think a lot depends on the individual, and I think that people have to be aware of how they drive, what they need as an environment in their car to be safe drivers. I think that there are some people who can multitask very well. William James, a psychologist from the late 19th century, said the world is a big, booming, buzzing confusion, but our minds, our very consciousness brings clarity to that. So we're in the business mentally of juggling a lot of things. Some people, I think, are fine with talking on the cell phone. Others are not. And those who are not do need to take heed, and I think their families need to tell them, don't talk on the cell phone when you're in the car. I hate to see laws that would prevent people from talking on the cell phone when they're in the car, because there probably are situations if a person is driving in the car and is alone and, you know, feels ill and needs to make an emergency call and, you know, is driving on a highway and can't stop, the cell phone could save that person's life and other people's lives as well. But absolutely, yes. I mean, caution needs to be used when people are using cell phones in cars.
The other topic about cell phones that I find less than attractive is this mushrooming of towers all over the place, along every interstate, on every hilltop, it seems like, anymore. It'd be nice if they could cut those down a bit.
Well, Well, I think that those are actually, that's a good point. In all technological development, there's a caterpillar and a butterfly. And the caterpillar is the sort of first expression of the technology. It's very often ugly, ungainly. And as the technology evolves, better, more attractive, and more effective devices take their places. Now, in the case of the cell phone, we can clearly see a trajectory. Satellites are beginning to play a role in cell phone use, although you're quite right that still there are an enormous number of towers on the ground, these relay stations. But I would guess that certainly within a decade, most cell phone use will be taking place through satellites in which there are many fewer towers and relay stations on the ground. The tower is really a sort of holdover from the days of radio broadcasting, which still uses towers, where, you know, the broadcast was relayed from one station to another. So we're talking about a concept that's almost 100 years old. But I think that as we move into the 21st century, we'll see less of that.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Let's go on here. We have somebody on line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My question is about what the future of the instrument itself will be. I mean, you talk about, you know, the integration of wireless voice with other wireless media. And my question is, it seems to me that, you know, initially the emphasis with the cell phone itself was to make it as small as, you know, your fingernail, and the idea that smaller was better. But that sort of conflicts with the flexibility of using it to do things like text messaging, that if the phone is so small, it's almost impossible to really make it viable as an instrument for these other uses. So I'm wondering what you think how that will evolve.
Well, that's also a very good question. And throughout history, we've always seen trade-offs in media. Meaning a new device comes along and it does things better in some ways, but worse in other ways. So, for example, television as a very good example. It certainly was good to be able to relax at home and see a movie on the television screen, but the screen on television was much smaller and the sound was much poorer than most movie theaters. And so you're quite right that the reduction in the size of the cell phone does place a limit on what can be visually presented in a way that we find satisfying. Now, actually, texting and text messages, I think, probably can work pretty well on a fairly small screen because you don't need to see, if you're just, you know, sending a couple of lines and a couple of sentences, in contrast to writing a book or a paper, you don't need to see all that much of the text on the screen. But what is a problem is if a person wants to watch a movie, you know, on their cell phone or watch a television show, and then if the screen is the size of a postage stamp or a thumbnail, that, you know, can be a problem. So what we'll probably have is, just as we now have with motion pictures, when someone wants to see a movie with all the trimmings, they go out to a motion picture theater. My guess is as more people watch television shows in the next decade on their cell phone, on their little portable internet device, if there comes a time when they want to see something on television with a bigger screen, they'll just watch it at home. What it really will do in the end is give us the option of getting visual information on the move outside of our homes with the trade-off that these screens will be smaller.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Here's a question that might perhaps be maybe one more addressed by a sociologist, perhaps. But and that is that it has to do with how it is that this device affects our relations with one another. And I guess one thing I'm thinking about is wondering whether you see any kind of developing cell phone etiquette that has to do with when and where we use them, because that is, I think, a point of annoyance sometimes for people, that is other people using them. And of course, if we happen to be standing next to somebody who's talking on their cell phone, you're privy at least to one half of the conversation. It it seems that that's something that we really haven't thought very much about. Now, maybe it's something that we really don't need to think about. We've just leapt into it, and there we find ourselves.
Well, we do need to think about it, and I do talk about that extensively in my cell phone book. There are several aspects to this problem. One, which I think is really very important, is we need to develop an etiquette in which people have the right to refuse to communicate, meaning that just because someone is calling us on our cell phone doesn't mean that we have to have a conversation. We're coming from a history where information was always relatively scarce, and it was something of an unusual thing to get a phone call. I mean, it's been many years since it's been unusual to get a phone call, but it's still somewhat unusual to get a phone call when you're not at home. But what's quickly happening is that's moving into a situation where, it's no longer exciting. It could sometimes be annoying. And what we have to do in that case is develop a recognition and a respect for the right of people to say, no, I don't choose to communicate at this time. As far as the phone being annoying to other people, that itself is also an interesting issue. One of the things I talk about in the book is I was on a train from New York to Washington a couple of years ago, and I noticed there was a couple having an argument, a man and woman, about something. It wasn't a serious argument. There was no, physical violence or anything implied, but it was a pretty, high-pitched argument, pretty loud. Most people on the train heard it. And, people looked around and then basically went about their business. Well, the argument was over, and about 15, 20 minutes later, a woman got a call on her cell phone and proceeded in pretty much the same decibel level to have a conversation, not an argument, some kind of business conversation on her cell phone. And I noticed that in the case of the cell phone call, most people on the train were much more annoyed than they were when this couple were having an argument. It was almost the use of the cell phone itself was annoying. It wasn't that the voice was any louder. And I think that these are part of the growing pains of cell phones. And I think there has to be give and take on both sides. I think people who use cell phones need to be aware that other people might not want to hear their conversations. And people in the environment shouldn't get so upset or annoyed. And, and I think this is beginning to happen already. We sort of, tune out when someone else is talking on the cell phone. Part of the problem is whenever a cell phone rings, if we have a cell phone, for a split second we think it might be our cell phone ringing, and so it commands our attention, and then we're annoyed that we were pulled away from whatever we're doing because someone else's phone is ringing. Okay. But the cell phone has only been in our mass culture for about 10 years, so these are very early days for cell phone use, and I'm sure most of these problems will be worked out.
Yeah. It reminds me, your story reminds me of an experience that I had. Now, this was a couple of years ago, and I think it was the first time that, and it wasn't that it was new, but it was the first time I was aware of somebody having a conversation using one of those earpieces that has a microphone attached so that you don't have to hold the phone to your ear. Mm-hmm. And I was in a coffee shop. It was at a Starbucks in the town where I grew up, and I was sitting there having coffee, and it was a tiny place, so there were very small tables, and nearby me there was a couple sitting. There was a man and a woman, and there was a woman. She was sitting there. She was reading a book, and the man was talking. And I guess immediately, right at the beginning, I assumed he was talking to her. So he's sitting there talking in sort of a normal, maybe even slightly louder than normal tone of voice, and she's sitting there reading her book, and periodically she looks up for the book and gives this guy the dirtiest look you ever saw. And I'm thinking to myself, man, these people need to work on their relationship. And after a couple minutes, I realized, no, he was not talking to her. They just happened to be sharing the table because it was a small place and there weren't that many chairs, and he was talking on his cell phone. It was some kind of business thing, because he was sitting there, he was wearing a tie, and he had papers spread out in front of him, and he was having this conversation that was kind of like, uh-huh, yes, we can do that. Sure, we could get enough chairs for that. And finally, I got the clue. Oh, no, these people are not together. And she was this woman who was sitting there trying to read her book and have her coffee, was really unhappy, obviously, with this guy who was just sitting there doing his business thing.
That's a great story. I mean, overhearing these half conversations are like when we're on an airplane. I'm always too cheap to pay the $5 for the headphones. I mean, once in a while I do. So I always say to myself, well, I'll be able to watch the movie and pretty much get it. I don't need the headphones. But of course, it's annoying to see the movie with no sound. The cell phone is sort of the reverse. We hear a voice without any context, and you know, it can be irritating.
Yeah. And I guess, as you have said, the other disadvantage maybe to the technology, and also something that changes the way we live, is that before the cell phone, there were times when people were unreachable. Now, if you have the phone and you're willing to answer it, you're never unreachable, and somehow that tether sometimes can seem to be a terrible burden, because it means that your office can always reach you. It means that your family can always reach you, and it's hard to find that sense that you're really alone and apart. You could be out in the middle of the wilderness, and someone could still call you on your cell phone.
That's absolutely right. One of the things I mentioned in the book is Marshall McLuhan in the 70s, 1970, said that the last place that a North American can be alone in terms of not being reachable is when you're alone in your automobile. And, of course, that was about a decade before first car phones and now cell phones. Probably teenagers feel this two-edged sword more keenly than any other part of our population, because on the one hand, and, you know, we have two kids, actually, you know, one is now 21 and the other is 17, so they're almost out of their teenage years, but they both had cell phones, you know, for a couple of years. You know, at first, they were very eager to have a cell phone of their own so they could call their friends. But as soon as they discovered that we could call them, and, you know, if they're going out at night, we expect them to take their cell phone and be reachable, then suddenly they had to think about, well, you know, maybe I won't take my cell phone. And it's a fascinating, you know, situation, and it's fascinating to see how it plays out. But in a way, it typifies what the case is of all media. There's never been a medium invented that's only been beneficial and only been helpful. It's always, you know, a trade-off, a two-edged sword. And the medium survives if, on balance, it's better for our society, and the pluses outweigh the minuses.
Yeah, just wait until we get global positioning devices built into those cell phones, and parents can click on their computers and find out where their children are. Then the kids are really going to be unhappy.
Absolutely. I'd love them as a parent, but right.
Our guest is Paul Levinson. He's professor and chair of communication and media studies at Fordham University in New York City. He is also a science fiction writer. His novels, The Silk Code and The Consciousness Plague, have both won major awards. He is the author of the book, Cell Phone, The Story of the World's Most Mobile Medium and How It Has Transformed Everything. Paul Grafe Macmillan is the publisher. The book is out now. I do think it's interesting how, and I'm assuming that probably the younger people are more receptive to the technology. At least, again, around the campus here, it seems that everybody I see, all the students that I see, virtually they all have cell phones. I see them in my coffee shop, and they're sitting down there and they're doing their homework. And most of them have laptops, and then on the table in front of them will also be a cell phone, and maybe also a portable CD player or something like that. Is it more likely that the younger you are, the more receptive you are to the technology?
Absolutely, yes. In the case of the cell phone, the growth rate has been about twice as fast among people under 21 than people over 21. Although, interestingly, there's been a recent spurt among senior citizens in the use of cell phones. But in general, new media are always most appreciated by people who don't have that much invested in older media. We saw this with computers. And I remember in the early 80s, I was at a party and somebody asked me a question about a computer, and I was starting to answer, and then a little voice piped up. It was the son of the person whose house we were at, and he was about a six-year-old kid, and he very clearly explained how to use this computer much better than I was explaining it, because he had obviously been spending time on the computer. But the telephone, even when it was a device hooked into the wall with wires, which it still is in some areas, of course, was always something that kids especially liked, because it got them out of the supervision of their parents. You know, when you're talking to someone on the phone, that person that you're talking to is not part of the home environment. And so in that sense, it's very liberating. And the cell phone just takes that to the next step. there are problems. You know, you mentioned education in classrooms, of cell phones ringing in classrooms, and you know, I always tell my students, you know, that it's not acceptable for them to have a phone conversation while they're, you know, in my class. But I do have to admit that I keep my cell phone on in case, you know, who knows, Steven Spielberg may want to call me and make a movie out of one of my novels. So I don't want to miss that call. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk with some other folks here. Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hello. Hi. I actually just had a brief story to share, but the reason I have a cell phone is I'm a teenager, and my parents outfitted us with cell phones about a year ago, and the idea was that we could call them if, like, you know, we really needed a ride from somewhere or something like that, just to let them know where we were. So I've generally been glad to have it. But what happened was you had mentioned that, you know, you could even maybe be out in the wilderness and get a cell phone call, and that actually happened to me. I was on vacation in Utah with some friends, and we had hiked down a canyon, and I was sitting on a rock looking around, and my cell phone rang. It was my grandparents wondering if I could mow the lawn. So I just wanted to share that story.
Well, at least you had a good excuse. You could say, no, I'm sorry. I'm not available for that right now.
That's actually what I said. I was like, well, I'm kind of out of town, so.
Well, thanks for the story.
Thank you.
Do you mind when your parents call you on the cell phone?
They do, yeah.
And that's okay with you?
Yeah, it is, because I call them.
All right. Well, you're a good daughter.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. We have somebody else here who is north of Bloomington on our toll-free line, line four. Hello. Well, maybe not. Let's try another Urbana caller here. This is line two. Hello.
Yeah, have you talked about the way kids are using cell phones to cheat on exams at all?
Well, it's a problem, and you know, I just finished giving my final exams here at Fordham University in New York City, and you know, we tell people to turn their cell phones off, and you know, we and other, you know, faculty in their classes, when they get final exams, have to keep an eye on students. It is certainly a tempting way of cheating, and you know, the fact again that the cell phone can hook into the web, and you know, you can look up all kinds of answers there, unless you're giving an open book exam, that can be a problem. So, you know, again, most technologies, you know, are like knives. If you think about what a knife can do, a knife is good. It cuts food. That's helpful. You know, it can help us construct things. That's good. But knives can be used for bad things. And the cell phone, in terms of communication, is really, you know, a two-edged sword. To get back to the Swiss Army knife metaphor.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of stuff recently about how you know, they had a thing on ABC about upskirting and using the camera part of some phones. But I was going to dare to be sexist here, and I was going to ask you if I'll hang up after I ask. But I was just curious if it just seems like so many women would be in really dire straits if the cell phones went down all of a sudden, and I was just kind of curious if I mean, I see them at 8 o'clock in the morning, like walking to class, and they're still conversing in this university town, and I'm just curious if you see anything in particular as it relates to women in particular, and I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
All right.
Well, actually, 2 points. First, on the upskirt shots. I mean, these are a serious social problem, and first surfaced in Japan. It's people using cell phones, you know, in clothing stores, department stores, somehow getting into changing rooms, or even on subways and taking inappropriate photos. And, you know, the Japanese authorities have been trying to crack down on it. At the very least, you know, when these appear on the web, certainly they should be investigated and prosecuted. Here in Westchester County, New York, the county executive has proposed outlawing cell phone use in restrooms, which probably is going too far, because let's say a person gets a call, you know, an innocent call. But again, this is one of these social problems which, you know, we have to focus on. As far as the second part of the question, no, there's no evidence whatsoever that women use cell phones more than men. It's pretty much equal. There is, as I've mentioned earlier, a disproportionate large cell phone use on the part of younger people, on the part of, you know, kids and even people in their 20s. But men and women use cell phones equally. So, you know, sometimes we observe something out in the street and around us, and we think that that's the case. You know, we project that for, you know, the rest of the world, but in fact, cell phone use is pretty equal between the genders.
I'm not sure this is a question that's answerable, but if you do you think that now that so many people have cell phones that we are, all of us are spending more time talking on the phone than we did at the time when everybody was dependent on landlines, that phone that's plugged into the wire that comes into your house at home?
Yes, there's no doubt that we're spending more time talking on the phone, and that raises a very important point. There are only, of course, 24 hours in a day. We spend, you know, with any luck, at least 6, 7, 8 hours sleeping if we can get it. And so media are constantly in competition for our patronage. And the telephone always trumped other media, even the old, you know, landline phone. If we're watching television and the telephone rings, you know, it could always be the person who's going to offer us that great business deal, you know, the person we've been madly in love with. Usually it's someone, you know, pitching some kind of insurance, you know, scheme or whatever. So we're disappointed, but nonetheless, that ambiguous phone ring is almost irresistible. And now with cell phones, we're spending more time talking on the phone. And one interesting question is it better to talk on the phone than talk to the people around us? And this was a question that arose in phones used at home, and now it's a question that arises with people out in the world. And again, it's a trade-off because the cell phone has the benefit of enabling us to be out in the world, to feel the sunshine on our face, you know, the breeze blowing through our hair, and talk on the phone. But when we have that conversation on the phone, we're not attending to something else in our immediate environment. So I think that there is more long-distance communication and less immediate communication as a result of the cell phone.
All right. We have some other folks here, someone in Indiana. They are next. Line one. Hello.
Yeah, statement. Where I'm from in Indiana, a little host state, it's illegal to use cell phone in a moving car. Something you were talking about earlier and didn't want to have happen, but they kept some kind of track of the amount of accidents occurred when people are on their cell phone by going into the companies to get their records, which the companies didn't want to do it, but anyway, it's state law now. Secondly, I got in on a synopsis of a story with the Sasser worm about the people, teenagers in Germany, and I didn't get to hear all of it, but the tail end, it was something that some of this started was a website or a ISP in Malaysia was used, and to cover the tracks, a wireless device was used. I presume that means a cell phone. I was wondering if you could make a comment about that.
Yeah, I think the wireless device used was not a cell phone. It was probably, you know, a Palm Pilot or some kind of PDA, that is some kind of very small computer. But it doesn't really matter because it could have been a cell phone. But implicit in your question is, yes, a cell phone can be used to deceive. When the Jason Blair story broke in the New York Times last year, Jason Blair, the reporter who was making up all kinds of stories and pretending to investigate stories, and, you know, one of the things that I couldn't help noticing was he was, in fact, in Brooklyn, near his home, and he used a cell phone to call in a story to his editor at the New York Times in Manhattan, and he claimed to be in Washington, D.C., investigating the story. So there's no doubt that the cell phone can be used for deceit. You know, it's interesting historically to know that the word phony, one of the origins of that word in the early 1900s was something that took place over the phone because it didn't seem real to people then. And in a way, the cell phone has given a new, meaning, you know, to that word. It is easier to deceive on the cell phone because it's not tied to any place. The cell phone caller can claim to be anywhere, and the person who receives the call has no way of verifying that. But you mentioned earlier, you know, global positioning chips and so on. We may soon have a time when we will be able to tell exactly where the cell phone caller is calling from, and that will at least eliminate that problem.
Next caller is in Champaign, as far as we know, and line two. Hello.
Yes, good morning. I'm interested in what you're having to say, and I was particularly interested about the cheating on tests. Do you think maybe, since it's so easy to get information to cheat on the test, that maybe it says as much about what's being taught and what's on the test as it does about those cheating?
Well, that's a good question. I should mention that I, as professor, only give open book exams because I'm not interested in what the students can remember, because you don't need to remember that much to be successful in this world. I'm more interested in what the students understand and how they can organize the information in coherent ways and give lucid answers. So, I'm sympathetic to what your point is. However, there are other classes which are not classes in communication history and communication theory. There are other classes, say language classes, where memorization is crucial to the subject. You know, if you can't remember what a certain word means, you know, you're not going to be able to do that well in that language. So it's in those cases, I think, where it doesn't make sense to give open book exams, and where the cell phone can be a dangerous device if it's used for cheating.
It just seems to me that if it's so easy to cheat, that the information is, and it's so easy to retrieve the information or to find it out, that maybe what they're testing on isn't as good. And I understand you understand what I'm saying. And I realize that memorization is necessary, but I think that many of the tests are geared to this kind of thing, and they need to not worry so much about the cell phone, but what they're doing on their test.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You are. I mean, again, it depends on the subject matter. If someone is taking a test in French, you wouldn't let them bring in a French dictionary unless, you know, it was a very advanced course and you were testing something else. But if you were just simply testing vocabulary, you wouldn't have them bring in a French dictionary. So by the same token, they shouldn't have a cell phone where they can get that information. I think there's nothing wrong with those kinds of tests for those kinds of classes. On the other hand, if you're talking about a class in media theory, philosophy, understanding history, and, in fact, a wide variety of subjects, then I agree with the caller.
All right. Another caller here. This is someone in Urbana, line three. Hello.
Yeah. On campus, I saw a couple walking along together, each talking on their cell phone. So I thought, gee, this...
Presumably not to each other.
Right? That's right. And I thought that was sort of interesting, you know. The comment I have is that, or probably, in this, we're, you know, being this wired society, this increasing stress, you know, not only on, you know, as couples, but also in the business environment, that where do you get this time to sort of be alone? I get this feeling that sometimes people don't like to be alone, or they do everything to keep from being alone. So, you know, the idea of reflecting on your life and, you know, thinking about these things over, that people who become so wired in this tremendous amount of stress, you see it, you know, in couples with their children, you know, everybody, they've got their jobs or at home, you know. So I don't know, in terms of a comment, what do you think?
Well, I think, you know, the cell phone and any medium works best when it's an option, not a requirement. So I think the cell phone as an option that people can use to communicate, whether families or for business, that's very good, as long as it's, you know, an option. And what that means is, as I was saying before, people need to develop and cultivate the capacity to say no, to shut the cell phone off, or not to answer the cell phone when it rings, and so that they have some time with their own thoughts. I mean, that's an important part of life. But the example, you know, the couple walking, each talking on their own cell phone, it reminds me there's a great scene in Citizen Kane. It's Citizen Kane's, I guess, Kane's first marriage. Kane played by Orson Welles, and I forget who played his wife. And they're sitting around a breakfast table, and they start off talking to each other, and Kane is like sort of glancing at the newspaper, and his wife is looking at a book. And then the table spins around, some time passes, and Kane is much more seriously reading the newspaper, and his wife is much more seriously reading the book, and they're barely talking to each other. Then more time passes, the table spins around again, and we see them eating breakfast, and they're not having any conversation whatsoever. Kane's head is totally buried in what he's reading, and the same for his wife. that dramatically shows the dissolution of that relationship. So in a way, a couple walking, each talking to a completely different person on the cell phone, does make you question that relationship. Although we're just seeing one split second of the relationship, possibly they talk to each other the whole rest of the day.
Yeah, but also, it's one thing, I eat out a lot, go to a lot of restaurants, and in restaurants, this always concerns me when you see these couples and they're not communicating. And I don't know what percentage, but it seems that there's a fair number from time to time. So, anyway, my concern still is there's so much pressure in society, especially in the job today. We talk about productivity going up and up. You know, people are working longer and harder hours, and what happens is it's sometimes it's hard to say no, especially if you've got a job that where you still stay in contact, especially when you move up into the management area. But anyway. Good show.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Well, we are down to maybe about 5, 6, 7 minutes in this part of Focus 580 with Paul Levinson. He's professor of communication and media studies at Fordham University, and he's got an entire book on this subject if you're interested in looking at it. It's titled Cell Phone, the story of the world's most mobile medium and how it has transformed everything. You know, a couple of years ago, I was watching the program 24. You're probably familiar with that. Other people
great
are.
Show. Yep.
This sort of thriller espionage drama series. And the gimmick of the show, for people who are not familiar, the gimmick of the show is the events of the story take place over a period of 24 hours. There are 24 installments, and each of the programs is in real time. So it's like it's what happened. The first one is what happened the first hour. Next one is what happened the second hour and so forth. And so I'm watching the show, and at some point it just struck me that people on that show are constantly talking on the telephone, and that if were it not for the cell phone, I thought this program would be impossible, which leads me to think about, and I wonder whether you have thought about it since you're a novelist also, about the cell phone and its use as a device in fiction or drama.
Well, absolutely. And in all my novels, the cell phone plays a major role because, actually, three of my novels feature Dr. Phil D'Amato. That's the name of the character in The Silk Code, The Consciousness Plague, and The Pixel Eye. He's a New York City forensic detective, and he constantly gets involved in strange cases. But in order to have him out investigating the cases and also get the latest information, he has to have a cell phone. And, you know, you ask a good question because it even occurred to me if I had been writing about the same character in the 1970s or if I situated him then, just the trajectory of the story would be very different because in order for him to get information, I'd have to have him get back to his office, you know, from time to time or use payphones. By the way, the payphone, in many ways, is the predecessor of the cell phone, because the payphone did allow people, when they were outside in the world, to make calls, not receive calls, unless they would call and say, call me back. So, in a way, it's sort of sad to see the payphone, go the way of so many older media. And it's sort of interesting, there was that movie Phone Booth, which was out about a year ago, and this summer the same producers are coming out with a movie called Cell Phone. So in effect, the movement from Phone Booth to Cell Phone is now cinematically recorded.
Well, I can't even think of the last time I saw a phone booth. I guess they must still exist, but now it seems that the payphone is pretty much, if it's not already gone, it's going to be gone. So that if you are out in the street and you need to make a phone call, you better have a cell phone or you're not going to be able to do it.
Yeah, there's a story, I don't know if it's true or not, somebody told me, it's probably true, that someone said just a couple of months ago, someone out somewhere on a street corner of Manhattan, could I borrow a quarter? I have to make a phone call. I was standing next to one of the few surviving phone booths, and the person, rather than giving the other person a quarter, pulled out his cell phone and said, here, use my cell phone.
And I'm surprised the person didn't take off immediately with the cell phone. Now that would be a great scam for stealing cell phones, I guess. I don't know if they really would be worth very much. We're just about the point we have to finish. Just as a way of last thoughts here for a minute or two, maybe you could talk a little bit more about where you think this technology is going. And are there things you think that we will be doing with these devices that we can't imagine or that we don't readily imagine now?
Well, I conclude my book with two suggestions, one which would help the caller and one which would help the person being called. for the caller, I think it would be great if we could just speak the person's name that we want to get in touch with, and then a cell phone program would search the web and get every conceivable number where that person might be, and just keep calling numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, et cetera, until the person was reached, or maybe in some cases not reached. Meanwhile, for the person being called, it would be good if, in addition to we now see a number flashing as a call coming in, if we could hear the voice of the person making the call, and then we can decide, okay, who's at that number? It's my mother-in-law. No, I don't want to hear from her. It's my father-in-law. Maybe he's going to give me some money. I do want to hear from him. I'll accept the call.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much for giving us some of your time today. We certainly appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Our guest, Paul Levinson. He is professor and chair of communication and media studies at Fordham University in New York City, author of the science fiction novel Silk Code and the Consciousness Plague, also other books dealing with communications, The Soft Edge, Digital McLuhan, and Real Space. He is the author also of this book we've been talking about here this morning. It's titled Cell Phone, The Story of the World's Most Mobile Medium and How It Has Transformed Everything. And it is published by Palgrave Macmillan, out in the bookstores now if you want to take a look at it. You've been listening to a program from the Focus 580 Archives, first presented on the 13th of May. We have a lot of other interviews there. All of our local production is on the website. Anytime you like, you can check it out. It's at will.uiuc.edu. In the next hour, we'll be taking your calls. We will have a guest here in the studio with us, and that guest will be Dr. Jeff Swearingen. He's a family practice doctor at Carl Clinic, and every other month, he is here for a show we call Talk to the Family Doctor. Anything that might be on your mind, having to do with healthcare, I know he'll do his best to help you out. He deals with people of all ages in his practice. So whatever's on your mind, you should feel welcome to call in and talk with the doctor. The broadcast today is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Mall in Urbana, with more than a dozen shops, businesses, and restaurants, including Andy's Hallmark with cards, gift wrap, and candies, and The Reading Group, a nonprofit clinic helping children and youth with reading and writing problems, on the web at readinggroup.org. The broadcast is also made possible by Eastern Rug Gallery, offering a wide selection of guaranteed hand-knotted Oriental and Persian rugs of every size and color combination, from new to antique, to complement any decor. Eastern Rug Gallery, 1402 South Neal Street in Champaign. Also a reminder that coming up a little bit later today as part of the Afternoon Magazine, another archive conversation, you'll be hearing the story of a pirate who inspired Charles Darwin, Daniel Defoe, and Captain James Cook. Writer and historian Diana Preston will be talking with Celeste Quinn, co-author of a biography of a man named William Dampier. The title of her book is A Pirate of Exquisite Mind. Celeste spoke with her last April, and we will rebroadcast that interview following the 1 o'clock news today on the Afternoon Magazine. The show gets underway as usual at noon. Celeste Quinn is the host, and there will be the usual mix of news and sports and weather and other things in that first hour of the show. So that follows Focus 580. We'll have some news for you coming up at 1 minute past the hour, news from National Public Radio. Before that, we have an update on the commodity markets, so we hope that you will stay tuned.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Community Blood Services of Illinois, the nonprofit agency providing all donated blood for patients in Champaign-Urbana, Charleston-Mattoon, Danville, and Effingham. Donation information at 367-2202 or on the web at bloodservices.org. Blood donation. It's about life.
And good morning. With this update on the markets coming up on 10:59, I'm Jay Pierce. Well, the September wheat contract is up 2 at 317.75. December wheat currently unchanged at 332. September corn 226.75, up 1. December up a half at 230.